A lot of the research that you use to develop bioweapons is identical to the research that you use to develop a vaccine, or it can be. And so the Pentagon wanted to start doing this kind of research, but it was worried that the public would not believe that the Pentagon was doing all of this bioweapons research in order to develop vaccines. It just didn't seem plausible. So they outsourced it to Tony Fauci, and they gave him a 68% raise, which is one of the reasons today he is the highest paid person in the history of the federal government. He makes $434,000 a year. And the president only makes $400,000. So he gets than the president or the vice president. And a lot of that is money that's coming from his military weapon, bioweapons function.
Yes.
Oh, they began pumping $1.7 billion into, he already has a $6.1 billion budget. On top of that, they gave him $1.7 billion to begin developing bioweapons. That is now at $2.2 billion a year. Mm-hmm. And he then distributes that to different labs, you know, around the country. And in 2014, three of the bugs escaped. Three bugs from U.S. labs escaped. Dangerous bugs were found, you know, in very, very dangerous places, including smallpox. And 300 leading bioweapons experts, including Mark Lipsitch of Harvard and Richard Ebright from Rutgers, were kind of the leading voices in that space, signed a petition, 300 people, to Obama, asking Obama to shut down Tony Fauci's experiments because they were feared that he would release a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony Fauci and the Obama administration issued a cease and desist order to Tony Fauci. He defied the order, and he continued doing the experiments at Ralph Baric's labs, which were the worst experiments. Because he was engineering these gain of function bugs in ways that nobody had ever devised before. But he moved a lot of his operations to Wuhan, where they would be out of sight of the White House. And he laundered the money through this, you know, zoologist called Peter Daszak.
Yeah, yeah, our audience knows him.
But at the same time, he was giving millions of dollars every year, but the big money was coming from USAID, which is, you know, a well-known as a CIA front group, and from DTRA, the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, as well as millions of dollars from BARDA and DARPA, which are all connected to the U.S. military. And they were
just to pause and interject. That's backed up by the fact that, you know, thankfully now we've seen, thanks to The Intercept and some other folks who have gotten FOIA requests and information, that this EcoHealth Alliance was trying to hit up Anthony Fauci for money for gain of function. And when they couldn't get it directly, they went to DARPA. They went to the defense agency saying, how about from you? All that's been out now. So there's proof of everything you're saying. Keep going.
Yeah, so then they began, you know, the Chinese were already doing these kind of studies. And they, Fauci had been doing them since 2002. He had funded a study by a scientist called Kuo, where they had taken a mouse virus and made it so it could not infect mice, but it would infect and kill cats. Oh, it was like it was a gift to the mouse community. but in doing that, he had proven that you could do these cross-species transmission, and people were really freaked out about it. And they did a lot of other sketchy experiments. He ended up in China. The Chinese government, the U.S. government was saying, we're not really doing weapons development, we're really doing vaccine development. The lead scientist was Xingli Zhi, who mm-hmm. was called the Bat Lady.
Yep.
And Ralph Baric, who is Fauci's favorite funder from the University of North Carolina, started exchanging samples with her of spike proteins and teaching her and working with her about how to take the spike protein from how to remove the spike protein that affected rat bats and build a spike protein that had this furin cleave site that could attach to human lung cell. And then they tested it by, they were breeding mice, humanized mice that had human lungs. And they would give it to the mice, not only to see if they could kill the mice, infect them, but also to see if they could get the mice to cough and infect each other. And they succeeded in doing that. And then he did something, you know, so, but Tony Fauci can still say what I'm doing is for medical purposes, we're developing these things and then we're going to develop defenses against them. He funded one study that put the lie to all of that. He funded Ralph Barrett to develop a technique called seamless ligation. And that is a technique for hiding the engineering project. Mm. So you could, normally when you do that kind of engineering, you can see it and you can say that bug was created in a lab. He developed a way of hiding all traces that was developed. And he taught that to the Chinese scientists. To Xing Li Zhi. And that, you know, there is no public health. It is the opposite of what you would do if you were interested in public health. It's the opposite. If you're interested in public health, you would make sure that any kind of tampering you did like that had red flags all over it that says, we made this thing. Mm-hmm. To teach people how to hide that, it only has a nefarious purpose.
And that's because he was getting so much money from the Defense Department. Like he had to keep that money flowing.
I don't look into his head. I just show what the facts are. He was getting the money. He was doing these experiments. And I can show that he knew that something had to escape this lab because not only, but Ralph Barrett's lab is famous as the most protective, the best protocols, way beyond federal protocols, way beyond any protocols they use in the world. Ralph Barrick is famous. He brags about it. Other people brag about it. And yet on his lab, he had at least a half a dozen escapes. You know, mice that were infected bit people and infected them, et cetera. So there was a lot of disasters. So they knew the Chinese labs, the Chinese weren't even using their BSL-4 lab, which is the highest level. They were making these things in BSL-2 labs. Hmm. The State Department was writing letters. The embassy officials in China inspected the lab and wrote these alarm letters saying there's no protocols here, there's no personnel, yeah. There's no That's safety, right. You know, something, we know something's going to escape. And every lab there's escapes from, and this lab, it was clear. And so, you know, if you're a guy with a long history of taking part in fabricating pandemics, you know, I guess it's plausible that one way of creating a real pandemic would be just to do these, a lot of these experiments in a lot of different places where you know something is bound to escape. And I'm not saying he did that because I cannot look into his head. And I'm saying it's something, it's a consideration that, you know, we know that he knew there were improper safety protocols. And
well,
that
yes, but that's where you lose me on, you know, the suggestion, I understanding you're not in his head, that it was intentional. I just, he's a sociopathic lunatic.
I agree with that, and I withdraw that. I didn't say that. I think if you replay the tape that I said, it's plausible to imagine that this might happen. But again, I withdraw it, and it's something that I don't do in the book. I don't speculate. Mm-hmm. I just tell the facts, and I
can ask you a question. I got it. So let me ask you this, because we covered this on the show, but there was the moment after we saw the first few cases and the virologists started to look at the virus, you know, they got their first look at it, and there was reporting that Fauci, and Francis Collins, who was then running in our NIH, they had a conference call with all these maybe 12 top virologists in the world, and they said, let's take a look. You know, what do we think this is? And that virtually all of them came into this call, and the notes reflect that, saying this is man-made. This looks man-made. Looks like it's from a lab. And then miraculously, days later, after Yeah, 4 days later, and after who knows what communications with Fauci and Collins behind the scenes, they all did a 180, and they all stand behind that 180 to this day. It was like, and yet they have failed to share with the rest of us, what was it that changed your very strongly held opinions that it was man-made to this very strongly held opinion, which they were now calling racist, that they were calling the man-made theory racist, to change it 182. No, it definitely came from an animal, zoonotic origin, even though to this day, we have yet to find the animal. They've examined it, as I said earlier, 80,000 animals, haven't found it.
Yeah, Megan, it's also noteworthy that all of those people on that telephone call were doing work at the Wuhan lab, or were receiving money from Tony Fauci from NIH, that, you know, and not just a little money, tens of millions of dollars and more.
Yeah.
Or from Wellcome Trust, which is the British version of the Gates Foundation, and, you know, it's kind of almost like functions as an arm of the pharmaceutical industry. It's essentially the GlaxoSmithKline stock portfolio. And even more interesting, almost all the key players on that phone call who then took part in creating all of this literature out there that, you know, that characterized suggestions of lab leak as crackpot conspiracy theories. I got thrown off of Instagram, you know, for saying that Congress should investigate this. So virtually all of them, following their publications in The Lancet and Nature Medicine, received huge, huge grants from Tony Fauci. I mean, grants of, you know, 30 million, 40 million, I think up to 60 million. Kristen Anderson, I don't remember exactly what he got, but it could have been as high as $60 million spent after he performed that very, very important task for the, you know, for the medical cartel and the orthodoxy.
We checked that too, that they not only had they received grants beforehand, they received them after their miraculous and as yet unexplained 180. So it goes to a larger point that you make in the book, which is that there's you call it the medical cartel, but there is no daylight between Anthony Fauci and his group and Big Pharma. And there needs to be.
Yeah, I mean, if people ask, how do you fix this? And, you know, that's what you need. You need an independent regulator. We need regulators that are not getting money from pharma, that are not, you know, doing pharma's bidding, but are really working for public health and the American people, that are using real science. Tony Fauci does not study, you know, why are we having an autism epidemic? This would be very easy to find out. We know it has to be an environmental toxin, as you pointed out. And Phil Landrigan has narrowed it down to 11 possibilities that work on the timeline. It's really easy, basic science, to figure out which of those are contributing. But he will never do those kind of studies. And if anybody tries to do those studies, he will punish them. He will, you know, you can go in the... you could go on the public health records for Kaiser, the HMO records. If, let's say, you're a young associate professor at UCLA Medical School, you want to do a publication, an easy publication would do, get a hold of the Kaiser Permanente medical records, a depersonalized version, so you can't tell who the people are. And then look at the vaccine records and look at associations with subsequent diagnoses for autism or ADD or peanut allergies. If you try to do a study, propose a study, like an NIH is going to find out because they fund everything. And, you know, it's likely that the dean of your medical school will get a call from Ewok and Kloss or, you know, one of Tony Fauci's other operatives saying, you know, don't let this clown do this study, or it's going to put $50 or $60 or $100 million in annual funding from NIH to your medical school in jeopardy. So, between him and Gates and Wellcome Trust, Jeremy Farrar, who is up to his neck in Wuhan, they provide 64%